Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sherrod Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. There is an urgency in the call to secure the future of the Malayan tiger, now numbering fewer than 200. That's down from the over 3,000 that once roamed our forests in the 1950s. Now, found only in the Malay Peninsula, the Malayan tiger is its own subspecies. It is the biggest of the big cats. Lara Arifin and Harun Rahman of New Vista Media have put together a documentary to address the rapidly declining number of our national animal, the Malayan tiger. The documentary is titled Malaysia's Last Tigers, and it will premiere on Thursday, the 23rd of September on the National Geographic Channel. Now, they join us today on the show to share what went into documenting this critically endangered animal. Lara, Harun, welcome to the show. It's good to have you joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm going to begin with this documentary because it was directed by you, Harun, produced by you, Lara. And Lara, I understand that you are also president of the NGO Rimau, and I'm curious to know what story you wanted to tell with this documentary. I mean, what did you hope to capture in this hour-long series? Lara, maybe you can begin.
Thank you again for having us. Really, this documentary began many, many years ago, 2005. Harun and I wrote our first proposal for a tiger documentary. It was called Ghosts in the Garden of Eden, because they're so difficult to see. And that was the original title that we had. And since then, we've, you know, this love affair with tigers, you know, began. And so we've been documenting tigers since then. And so throughout the years, there were so many stories to tell, really. But, you know, at the end of the day, we had 45 minutes to be able to put it all in. And believe me, many scenes got cut out, unfortunately. But so I think the crux of the documentary, you know, what we really wanted to get across was the current situation our tigers are in, you know. I think that was the main, you know, emphasis of the documentary.
Mm-hmm. Harun, maybe I could add to Melissa's question and say, you know, what do you understand to be the level of public awareness about both the animal, its ecosystem, the challenges it faces, and the relationship between that public and the future of the tiger?
It's quite a difficult situation to be in because wildlife don't get seen by general public. So it's in the jungle somewhere and everything's fine. So when you go past in the highways and any of the national parks and stuff, you don't see many animals, and that's what's making it so difficult to convince people that tigers are in trouble right now, or wildlife is in trouble right now. And the National Tiger Survey that we highlighted in the documentary actually shows this in very clear and in very graphic form. It's so difficult to film a tiger in the wild in the rainforest. Unlike in India, for instance, you can take a jeep and you can see a tiger. In Malaysia, we had to walk for 2 days just to get to the location, to set up camera traps, much less see tigers. A tiger can be 10 feet away from you and you won't know a single thing. So it has been quite interesting. And because we can actually now see the tigers in their wild habitat and show people their magnificence, and also what the problems are. And it's very clear from what we have caught on camera, some tigers are three-legged, some tigers are injured. We've had tigers that we filmed that were caught in snares, for instance. So that awareness is slowly coming into the general public.
If you don't mind,
sure, go
yeah,
for it.
I just would like to add on in terms of the general awareness of the Malaysian public, I think it's still very poor. We've done, you know, sort of on the street surveys. Tahu kah, you know, berapa harimau Melaya yang tinggal? And when we say below 200, people are like, "Ya ke?" you know. Mm-hmm. So I think the general awareness, even amongst not only public, the public, but also, you know, people that make decisions, have really little understanding that how dire the situation is.
I have to admit, Lara, that when and it wasn't that long ago that I discovered there were less than 200 Malayan tigers in the wild. I had to check whether it was a typo because I thought we were missing a number there. But you know, you're absolutely right about the awareness. I don't think it's very clear in the public consciousness. I watching, you know, part of this documentary, for the first time saw what a snare looked like, a poaching snare looked like. I had never seen it before. Can you talk a little bit about that? What it was like to confront the realities of poaching in Malaysia? What did you see and how dire is the situation?
I think, you know, poaching is, I mean, in terms of the biggest threats to tigers, habitat loss, of course, especially in the past. So, I mean, we're down to 43% of rainforest left in Peninsular Malaysia. So habitat loss played a big role in tiger numbers going down. But over the last few years, the biggest threat to tigers is really poaching. And, you know, every element of the tiger is in demand, from its skin, even its whiskers, are in demand for acupuncture needles in China. So, I mean, every element of the tiger is in demand. So these poachers will come from far and wide. We have local poachers, but we also have poachers from Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. And these are organized gangs that come in and to hunt our tigers. They come into the jungle sometimes 3-4 months at a time, fully supplied, and they will stay there and they will lay hundreds of snares at a time to get what they want. So this is it's a serious problem. You know, for us to save tigers, we have to put enough patrolling personnel on the ground to be able to stop them.
Yeah,
and that's the only way.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the irony, of course, is that, you know, tigers are part of the national coat of arms. They're kind of iconic. So if there was any animal megafauna in Malaysia that would be well known, it would be the tiger. But I do want to come back to that question, of poaching and whether we're using the most modern, sophisticated technology to deal with these transnational criminal organizations. I mean, do you know of intelligence that's being used, intelligence gathering in order to thwart these criminals?
We're doing a lot in terms of the police is involved, wildlife department, customs, immigration. They're all doing their bit, but we're not doing enough.
Yeah.
These gangs are organized. They are well organized. They have their downstream all sorted out, and the tiger is just another product to them. It could be human trafficking, it could be gaharu, it could be drugs. It's all in one lorry and it all goes. So it's just another item on the menu for them, something that they are smuggling out. The tiger, of course, brings them a huge bonus because it's so rare, value is so high.
Mm.
So the intelligence that need to go behind catching these guys are far and wide, basically, because it's not just about wildlife; it's about everything else. So,
but I think everybody can contribute. I mean, I feel that, you know, I we did a documentary on the Malayan emergency a long time ago, and you know, one of the reasons why they won was they had good intelligence. You know, people telling people where they were, where the enemy was. And I think this is what we also need moving forward. But, you know, it's very difficult to get funding for intelligence work.
Right.
But that needs to be done on all levels.
Can I ask you about tapping into the intelligence network of the indigenous communities, what intel they can provide? Because they know these rainforests, they're perhaps may be able to, as you said, you know, increase patrolling, have more boots on the ground. Rangers, I think, can only cover a certain amount of area. Would working with indigenous communities, has that helped tiger conservation? Lara?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I think at the end of the day, I mean, working with local orang asli is so important. And, you know, they have been so left behind. And I think now I'm talking on a different hat of Rimal. We believe it is essential to engage and to offer them the opportunity to work as patrollers first within the forest system. So, for example, in Royal Belum, where we are putting most of our efforts in, we think it is essential that they are brought in as the forest custodians. They are the best. They're the best trackers, you know. But you see, the poachers have also used them in the past too, you know, because they have had there is no income so for them. So, you know, poachers have used orang asli in the past. There's no denying that. But the reality is we want them on our side, right? So you've got to give them, a job, you know, some sort of way of making an income. So I think that's what we are saying, that, you know, rather than paying patrollers from outside Royal Belum, for example, to come in, give the opportunity to those that live there first. Give them the opportunity to work in protecting the jungle, you know, as a real job, not just, you know, sikit-sikit je lah. No. These guys are given, you know, we appreciate them for what they do.
Speaking of appreciation, Harun, you know, Lara just mentioned the Malayan emergency and how you made a documentary about it. And I think my first introduction to the Malayan rainforest is through Chin Peng's memoirs. And, you know, as the Communist Party trekked through the kind of spine of the peninsula, you got a sense of the landscape. I don't know how many Malaysians are introduced to that landscape and learn to love it, really. You know, we're so modern. We love our cities and perhaps, you know, disdain our jungles. And, you know, I mean, how many people would even know what gharu is, right? It's a kind of wood, isn't it? Have we fallen out of love with our jungles, our natural environment? And that's a disconnect for many in the public to understand and feel and empathize with the issue of tiger conservation?
I'd love to answer that. I mean, you know, I think the reality is we have such a big problem. And I've been to schools up in northern Perak where we've asked kids, "Dalam hutan ada apa? What do we have in the jungle?" And the answer is a giraffe and a zebra. And I'm like absolutely, you know, shocked. And the reason why is they are seeing, you know, what's on their tablets is Madagascar or some, you know, foreign film without our local content being shown or being screened. And, we believe that tak kenal maka tak cinta, you know, so you really need to give that information. People need to know about what our rainforest is. So, for example, I think in the film, we will show a series of what is captured in the National Tiger Survey, and I can assure you many Malaysians would never have seen some of those animals, you know, the serau, the yellow-throated marten, you know, these animals are all in our jungle, and I'm sure that many Malaysians don't even know they exist, you know.
Coming back to your question, Sharat, is that also in reintroducing Malaysians to the rainforest is also a two-prong solution to this, because when you have more tourists, when you have more visitors to the rainforest, then you are actually creating a presence. And when you have that presence, that deter more poachers as well.
All right, that's actually a good point. And Lara and Harun, we want to thank you for being on the show. Appreciate your time. That was Lara Arifin and Harun Rahman of New Vista Media. They put together a documentary called Malaysia's Last Tigers. It premieres at 10 p.m. on the 23rd of September. That's Thursday. Catch it on National Geographic Astro Channel 551. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. But after this, we will be speaking to a tiger conservationist from Perhelitan. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hello, thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Joining us on the show now is Hazril Rafhan Abdul Halim. He's a Senior Assistant Director in the Wildlife Conservation Division of the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, or better known as Perhelitan. Hazril, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us. I want to begin our conversation, Hazril, talking a little bit about the National Tiger Survey. I understand that it is supposed to be the definitive nationwide tiger survey, so we finally know about the numbers that we have left. We know about what the habitat is like. So maybe we can talk a little bit about this survey. I know it's been going on for a while. How far, when will we get to know, or when will we find out the results of this survey and know more about how critically endangered our Malayan tigers are?
Okay, thank you very much, Manisha. And about the first National Tiger Survey, is a very mammoth activity being carried out by Wildlife Department. Because before this, we don't have any such of activity. Because it's using a very lot of funding to bear the cost to implement the NTS. Of course, the NTS, the National Tiger Survey, is conducted from 2016 until 2020. It's a 5-year period. We monitor with the camera trap we put in the forest and to capture the tiger photo as much as possible during the 5 years. And however, in 2018, the primary result that it showed that the tiger population is declining. It's supposed previously we have about 340 tiger. And during this time, of course, the National Tiger Survey already done in 2020, and the figure is less than 200. Of course, the official announcement will be announced by our minister, new minister. And however, we already start to do some extraordinary action in 2008 to cater this problem.
Hazril, you know, I understand that there are two major pressures on tiger populations. One is habitat loss and the other is poachers. Could you help us understand, in terms of the carrying capacity of the peninsula, I mean, you know, what would be an optimum level of tiger in the population so that we can, you know, so they have enough space to roam, but also we can maybe manage a human-tiger conflict?
Yeah, in this case, the optimum number for a tiger in our peninsula Malaysia is always been discussed in debate. Because the tiger population, if we want to maintain the population, it depends on the food source and the area for their roaming, and also the protection from poachers and so on. But however, in Malaysia, if we see that we still have a very good habitat of forest, this is about 50,000 square kilometer. And I think it's the tiger population can occupy about 1,000 tigers in the wild. But as I said previously, it depends on how much the prey species, I mean the food source for tiger, is in the forest, and also the protection from poachers, and also the area that tiger need to be roamed, because the tiger needs a very long range and a very big area to live.
Well, 1,000 Malayan tigers is very far off from the less than 200 we have right now.
Yes,
so it's a lot of work that needs to go into conservation programs. Can I touch a little bit on what you said, Hazril, about protection from poachers? I know Perhelitan does a lot of work on this. You know, you have rangers on the ground patrolling, looking for snares. But what is the method that you use? Are you looking to catch poachers in the act of laying the snares, or before they get into the forest, or once they have the captured animal? How does Perhelitan look to enforce or tackle the issue of poaching specifically?
Of course, we know that the poaching is the is a one of the very threat to the tiger. Of course, we try to get the poacher before they got the tiger or whatever species or whatever wildlife they catch. Right now, we put more boots on the ground to monitor the tiger habitat, because previously we see that we have lack of protection because the area is very big, 50,000 kilometers. We need a lot of manpower to do monitoring. And right now we are having the OBK, the Operasi Bersepadu Khazana. We have a collaboration with the Royal Malaysian Police, the NGOs and the local people. Under the program, we monitor all over the forest, the habitat. We cater every single hotspot area to prevent from the poaching activities happen. So right now we are enforcing that. So this program will continue as much as possible. And also we need to collaborate with more enforcement agency such as custom, Interpol, and so on, to get more info and more holistic problem.
Yeah, Hasrul, thanks for mentioning Interpol, because clearly this is a transnational crime. To what extent have we looked at, you know, targeting those markets, right, where animal parts are bought for their aphrodisiac qualities or said magical qualities? Is there any effort to stop the demand or lessen the demand for tiger parts in those markets?
Yes, actually under the enforcement, we have the enforcement unit that also have the, we have our own intelligence unit to cater this program. And also we collaborate with the good efforts with the Interpol to get more information to curb the wildlife syndicate. Of course, a lot of challenges because today's a lot of wildlife trafficking and also appear that happen in the online, and yeah, because the demand is there and it's not stopped right now, and we need more collaboration, especially with the neighboring country, to curb this activity. Mm-hmm. In the future, maybe we will have a transboundary collaboration. We started with Malaysia, Thailand, because our Malayan tiger share the area within the Belum and also in Halabala in Thailand. So we knew that, of course, the our Malayan tiger also cross into that forest, and also the poaching also come from neighboring country. So we need those all information to be shared and curb this illegal activity.
Hasra, thank you so much for joining us on the show, and thank you for your good work and your service. Appreciate your time tonight. That was Hasrul Rafhan from the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, or better known as Perhelitan. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Hutton, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Thank you.